Welcome everyone to the Dagum Dad podcast. It's just going to be me, Adam, today because Steve is not available. Today I have a wonderful guest here that I'm going to be interviewing over Zoom. His name is Sean Rapier, and I've known about him for about 4 years now because he has a podcast called Latter-day Lives. I highly recommend people going and listen to that.
Oh, thank you.
Because he's got some great stories and great guests on there. And so his name is Sean Rapier. He's a comedian. Hilarious, by the way.
Oh, that's kind.
And my first time seeing him and actually really hearing about him was Latter-day Night Live.
Yeah.
And that
was a long time ago.
Oh, that skit was so hilarious. I mean, I showed my kids my oldest daughter the other day, and she was laughing because she's 11. So she kind of understands the whole bit now. So,
you know, that was a DVD that we put out probably 17 years ago, maybe 18 years. It's been a long, long time since we put that out. And my wife and I were in Costco on Saturday, and a lady giving out samples stopped me, and she goes, "Are you a Latter-day Saint comedian?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Yes, as a matter of fact, I am." Mm-hmm. And she took a photo with me and she said, "Oh," and she went through all of the Latter-day Saint actors and whatnot that she knows. So
that is
she's very funny. People still remember it, which blows my mind.
Oh yeah. No, it was definitely a staple in
that. That was very fun. Very fun.
So good times. So reason why I had you come on today is because I know your story, but my listeners don't, over the years you have adopted quite a few children.
Yeah.
You want to kind of go in and
sure
tell us how that happened?
Yeah. And just stop with any questions or whatever. My dad experience is at once somewhat typical and at the same time, very different from most people's. So a couple things. I just for background, I was raised in San Jose, California. My wife is also from the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. I served a mission for our church down in Chile. She served a mission for our church down in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And then we both ended up in Southern California, and we were living down there, got married. And we were a pretty typical family. And I think growing up, you know, I was raised in a family with four children. My wife was raised in a family with five. And growing up, I always felt like people who adopted children were certain people mm-hmm. or certain types of people. And that's not me. I'm not the type of person who adopts a child. It's a different kind of person. So, you know, yeah. I was pretty dead set on two or three kids. My wife thought three or four. But we were going to be a normal, you know, normal family. We ended up moving to Provo for a job, Provo, Utah, mm-hmm. for a job that my wife had. And I was doing comedy and acting and stuff and could kind of live wherever. And then my wife started working for the Provo School District, and she was in the early education program. And there, I'll tell you, fatherhood, It's a beautiful thing, and faith will weave its way a lot into what I talk about today, mm-hmm. Because it's been a big part of our story. But a couple things that were interesting is, you know, I was doing whatever it took to make things work. I was working for a big model and film agency, selling acting classes. Mm-hmm. I was touring, doing stand-up. I was doing commercials, a lot of commercials back in those days, recording. So it was great, but also to make ends meet, I was doing whatever I could, you know, to support my family. I was selling frozen steaks door to door. And that was an interesting job. Let me tell you, it's easier to knock on the door and say, "Do you want to hear about Jesus?" than it is to knock on the door and say, "Hey, do you want to buy, you know, 70 pounds of beef?"
Yeah.
and at that job, it was fascinating. Some of the people that came through there, you know, there's pretty low barrier to entry. They'll take anyone with a pulse. And there was a couple working there whose life was just a mess. And I would sit and talk to them and listen and try to be compassionate. But they talked about how they had lost their home. They had lost their children. The state had taken them away and all these terrible things. And, you know, in the meantime, my wife's working in the Provo early education program. Well, my wife comes home one day and says, "Hey, we have got these two kids. They're 1 and 2, and they're the cutest kids you've ever seen. And they're about to be permanently taken away from their parents. And so I feel like we are supposed to adopt these kids. And Adam, I could not have been more shocked. Like, what are you talking about?
Like, I'm not one of those people.
Yeah, go find the people. Exactly. No, you're not wrong, Adam. It was like, go find those other people who adopt, because that's not us. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't adopt. And so I kind of went through this time of denial. My wife was like, look, you need to think about this. You need to pray about this. And I made the mistake of meeting the kids, and they were by birth brother and sister. Mm-hmm. And red curly hair, both of them, big hey, red cheeks.
Nothing I'm wrong telling with you, that.
That's why I throw it out there, man. You gotta love redheads, right?
Oh yeah.
So, but they had this gorgeous bright red curly hair, and they were only 10 months apart, but they were natural, you know, brother and sister.
Oh wow.
Same parents. And unfortunately, their birth parents really had a lot of struggles in life, between addiction and schizophrenia and all kinds of things going on. But one day, one evening, I finally took it seriously and I went for a walk in a park. It was actually a baseball diamond. And I just walked around the baseball diamond, praying my guts out, and finally got the answer. These are your children. They're your kids. And what am I going to do? I'm not going to argue that.
Yeah.
So I went home and told my wife, okay, we're ready to do this. So we dove into it, and through a series of just crazy events, came to find out that they were the kids of the people I had been working with at the beef sales place.
Holy cow.
And yeah. And so that was wild. And, you know, anyway, it was, and that will come back into play later on. But so we went to the state and said, hey, we're willing to do it. And the state had pushed us. The state were the ones saying, hey, we really need a family for these guys. Well, in the meantime, they were with a foster family who loved them. The foster family loved these kids, but just couldn't adopt them. And at the time, there was a rule that you could only have so many kids under the age of 6. And because they just had a baby, they exceeded that number. And that's why they had to give these kids up. And they came over to our house. The foster parents did. We were a young, poor couple. I mean, I was in my, you know, young 20s, and we were trying to keep it together. Mm-hmm. We just bought our first house, a 2-bedroom, 800 square foot home. And that was, you know, built in the early 1900s. And mm-hmm. yeah. She took one look at our house and everything. And she was quite wealthy, she and her family. And she just thought, no, these people are too young and too poor, and they can't take care of these kids. So she actually went and got one of her neighbors up the street. This neighbor had already adopted 2 kids and was looking to adopt more kids. She went and talked to this neighbor and said, hey, look at these beautiful children. You should adopt them. And the neighbor said, yes. Neighbor said, we will adopt these children. And the foster mom went back to the social worker and said, I've got this neighbor. Social worker said, we're already giving the kids to the Rapiers. It's a done deal. Foster mom says, the Rapiers have a smaller home. They don't make much money. They blah, blah, blah. The neighbors were wealthy. She said, if you don't give them to my neighbors who are a better fit, I'm going to, you know, cause a bunch of problems. I'm going to sue, whatever. And so here we were ready, and the state comes to us and says, sorry, we're giving the kids to this other family. Mm. Adam, it was the most devastating thing. It was like, well, wait a minute. I prayed about this. These are our kids. There's no way this is right. Mm-hmm. And that was right before Christmas, and we were planning our first Christmas with these kids. And so sure enough, they gave them to the neighbors. And for about, I don't know how long it was. But for a while, for a few weeks at least, I was in a serious depression. Like, and I was praying, like, how do I receive an answer that these are our kids? And then this goes down. Like, this is not okay.
Yeah.
And then one day I got a call from my wife, and turns out that the people who had taken the kids couldn't keep them anymore. And the state had already had a meeting and decided that they'd go with the original, And if we were still open to keeping them, that we would have them. And at this point, I was a little bit bitter. I was like, I'm not just going to jump into it. You know, I got my heart broken once. So I said, let's meet with this family. We went and met with that family that night, sat down on their couch. And I said, you know, what is going on? And they both just started bawling. And this is, you talk about the power of fatherhood, motherhood. Mm-hmm. The mother said, I have two adopted children that I know are mine. I know they're mine. And these two kids, every night I would kneel down by their beds to pray with them. And every night as I would pray, I would hear this voice that says, these are not your children.
Hmm.
And she said, I want more children. I want these children. I love them, but they're not mine. They were never supposed to be mine. Hmm. And so literally the next morning we called the state and they said, we got to get those kids out of there. It's too hard for these, you know, foster parents. Can you pick them up tomorrow morning? So in one day we bought a crib and we bought a high chair. Wow. And we bought my memory is that we ran down the aisles of Babies R Us and Toys R Us, just throwing cash in the air. You know, we bought beds and everything. We stayed up till 3 a.m. preparing a kid's room. Wow. And then the kids were given to us. Now you can imagine the parents did not know any of this, the birth parents. Mm-hmm. They just knew they were with foster families. So we had to go to a team meeting with them. They had met with my wife many times because my wife's the kid's therapist. Mm-hmm. So we go into this team meeting. They walk in, they go, okay, here's, and by that time they had left the meat job. Oh. But, and actually at that time I had also, but they walk in, okay, here's our former coworker and our kid's therapist. What kind of weird meeting is this?
What's going on here?
Yeah, as we said, surprise, we're married to each other and we're the foster parents.
Mm-hmm.
So we had these two kids and Adam, I became a father overnight to a 1-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Wow.
I remember being on almost no sleep and we had a little Volkswagen Jetta. We had put the two kids in the back, buckled them in, said goodbye to the previous foster family. And I remember driving down the street and looking in my rearview mirror. And these two kids were just staring forward. And I went, oh my gosh, what did we do? Then we got them home. We put them on the floor like.
Now what do we do?
I don't know how to do this. You know, I know what my dad did, but otherwise I have no clue. But it was neat. So the parents, the birth parents actually said, because custody wasn't final, like it wasn't completely cut off. And so the birth parents said, we're going to fight this. Till the end, they were allowed to keep filing, you know, contesting it. They said, we'll never allow you to adopt these kids. They'll never be fully yours because we need them to know how much we love them. Even though we couldn't take care of them, we love them.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I get a call from my wife. And at this point, I had started a regular career also. I've been in consumer electronics industry now for 25 years. I had just started in that. And my wife calls me up and says, hey, we need to get down to the courthouse now. The birth parents are ready to relinquish rights. And I scramble over there and the birth mom's bawling. Birth dad was kind of checked out. He was like, I don't care as much. But the birth mom was really sad. This was very hard for them. They love these kids. So then the birth mom says, I will sign over the documents. On one condition, I need 3 people to stand up and testify that I loved my kids. I want it on the court record that 3 people say it. She said, it's going to be my mom, my sister, and my best friend. And once those 3 people testify and it's on the record, it has to be 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're waiting for the best friend, waiting, waiting, waiting. Best friend's not showing up.
Oh, wow.
We start panicking. The lawyers are going, what are we going to do? And, finally find out the best friend's not coming. And the birth mom says, that's a sign. If 3 people can't stand up and testify, this is all over. And so I walked over to her and we had fortunately built a little bit of a relationship. And I said, hey, how many days did you and I and your husband sit with you telling me how hard this was when we were all selling meat together? How many days have I heard you talk about how much you love your kids? Can I be that third person? And she said, okay. And her mom stood up and testified and her sister. And then I stood up there and bawled my eyes out because the whole thing was so emotional. She loves her kids. And just like that, the judge said, do you freely do this of your own will? And that terminated parental rights. They were our foster kids for a little while longer. And then, boom, they were adopted. And realistically, part of our impetus for adopting them, the two-year-old, which is our son, David, he has a lot of emotional development issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, he's autistic. But then, you know, there was a lot of, we think, fetal alcohol syndrome, you know, played a role. And they're just, he had already been through a lot by the time he was two. Our daughter, Krista, seemed to be, you know, fairly normally functioning. So a lot of people wanted to adopt her, but they were going to split them up. So we kept them together.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, that's the end of our life in adoption, you know, and I was ready to have one more kid. That was it. I was going to be done with three. So we ended up having a son pretty quickly thereafter. Our son Miles. And then we moved and my career kind of took off, which was nice. We ended up having another son named Keaton. And at that point we had four kids and I was like, hey, we're done. Life's good. Well, David continued to have a lot of issues. We learned very early on as a young father, when we first brought him home, that if he was really angry, he would bite me.
Oh, wow.
But if he was really happy, he would bite me. And if he wanted something, he would bite me. And
a lot of
if he was bored, he would bite me. Yeah, he had a lot of issues. And he had a lot of anger management issues. And as he got older, there was some lying. There were some other things. And he had just a lot going on. And so at one point, you know, he was seeing a lot of therapists. They said, look, we really need to treat him and figure out what is actually going on. We'd like him to go to the state hospital in Provo and have him stay there for a few months while we diagnose and get him on the right medications and everything else. That was a hard decision to make, but we decided to do that. And every Sunday I would go sit with him in church. They had a church right there. And so I went up one Sunday and was sitting there in church, just doing my thing, whatever, minding my own business. And all of a sudden I heard a voice. And in my head, that voice said, you will adopt a teenage daughter. And I went, oh, for Pete's sake, no.
Like, no, not again.
Like, yeah, and a teenage daughter, like, what? No. Yeah. And so I'm going, how do I tell my wife this? I was the reluctant one of the adopters. And and so finally, I went home and I said, hey, this is what I felt very strongly while I was sitting in church with David. And she said, yeah, I've felt that for a while now. And it's a teenage daughter. Like, we just kind of knew. So we called the state, said, hey, we're willing to bring in a teenage daughter. Don't know why. And it's a really funny thing. Again, parenthood being so special and so important. They reached out to us and said, okay, here's a girl named Karen. Here's her file. And we'd hear the name and we'd go, Karen, that doesn't sound right. Or that doesn't feel right. Or, you know, we'd read through the file and we'd go, well, I'm not sure that that's her. And that doesn't seem like her. We never actually met any of the girls because we would never do that. That's cruel. We had to make decisions based on files and stuff. And we went through, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 girls. And I was on a business trip. And then one day my wife calls me up and says, hey, they've got another girl for us to look at. And I said, okay, what's her name? And my wife said, Portia. And I went, that's her. And my wife said, I know, right? I know that's her. Like, it just clicked. We knew that was her. And Portia came from one of the roughest backgrounds of all of our kids. A lot of addiction, a lot of, you know, literally being told, hey, I don't need you anymore by a parent. I mean, really some tragic stuff. And she was not quite 14 at the time. And when we met her, she wasn't even sure she wanted to go to a family, but fortunately she jumped in with us. And so we adopted Portia. And so Portia was our fifth child then. And again, we're done. That's it.
So how old are your other children at this time?
Well, let's see. Portia was 13 and so that was 17 years ago. So Keaton was a newborn. Miles was 6. David then would have been, let's see, David now is 25. So David was probably 9 and Krista was 8.
Okay.
So I think newborn 6. Yeah, 8 and 9, somewhere around there. And so we bring this 14-year-old girl in. And, you know, when you adopt older children, there seems to be a pattern. And I've heard this from many other adoptive parents, that you bring them in and there's a honeymoon period where they're just so glad to be adopted. But there's what's called reactive attachment disorder, RAD. And the way reactive attachment disorder works, it's like, hey, I bonded with my birth parents and I love them more than anything. Then you ripped me away. And it was so painful, that wound of being ripped away was so painful that I will never allow it to happen again. So we go through a honeymoon period. Then it's like, oh, I'm starting to bond and feel what I felt with my birth parents. I can't do that. So I'm going to sabotage this to prove to you what a rotten, unlovable kid I am, so that we can quickly rip this bandage off and be done. And you go through a year of, or 6 months or 2 years. Sometimes it never changes, but all I can describe it is as hell. It's a horrible time. And we went through that with Portia, and yet now she's 30 years old. She just turned 30 last month. Amazing relationship with her, and she's doing great things in life. I'm so proud of her. But so then we had adopted Portia, and the family was crazy. And yet somehow my wife said, hey, the state just reached out. There's a 14-year-old girl. Her name's Chloe. Doesn't have a home. Again, comes from a background, massive addiction background. Parents have been in and out of prison. She has a brother, a younger brother, who's fairly severely autistic and major behavioral issues. But Chloe is, you know, has been through a lot, but she's a fairly normal young woman. What do you think? And at that point, I was like, yeah, we got the bedrooms, just whatever. I don't go through the big walk in the park anymore. It's like, yeah, fine.
So you Chloe, just know.
That was it. So Chloe joined our family. She's 23 now. So she's the same age as our son, Miles.
Okay.
I'm there about a month apart. And then once again, about 10 years ago, wife reached out. Hey, there's another boy. He's 9 years old. And man, he has energy. Holy cow. His name's JC. And, you know, again, drugs and all kinds of stuff. And unfortunately, both of JC's parents have passed since. But we brought him in. We adopted him. He's 19 now. So that was 10 years ago. And then we are for sure done at 7. And then funny enough, So Chloe has a full blood birth brother who's in the system, who's living in a group home. He's not high functioning enough to live on his own. He's functioning. Like, I was literally on the phone with him right before we started recording. But he lives in a group home and will not be able to live on his own. And we met him multiple times. You know, he came to her high school graduation, came over to our house with his social worker a few times. And so we kind of knew him, and they called and said, hey, he's turning 18. And he won't have a family, like, come Christmas, birthdays, he needs suggestions for, you know, what to do with life. He has no one to call. He has no parents. Like, there is no one for him to lean on. Would you guys be willing to adopt him? And we love Cameron. So we said, yeah, you bet. So I didn't know you could adopt an 18-year-old. I was like, is that even?
I didn't know either.
Did you know that law is you can adopt anyone who is at least 10 years younger than you are and is not legally claimed by someone else. So realistically,
interesting,
you know, like, I guess an 80-year-old could adopt a 70-year-old, you know, if they're not claimed by someone else. So I never knew that, but we ended up adopting Cameron. He lives in a group home now, as does our son, David. Mm-hmm. They both live in group home programs. They're at work programs. And but all of our kids have grown up, and now we're down to one, Keaton, who was the baby. He is 17. He'll start his senior year in high school the day after tomorrow.
Oh, there you go.
And that's it. All the other kids are out and on their own. So that's my wild story of how we came together with 8 kids. Sorry, that was kind of a long one.
No, that's fine. That's crazy.
It's totally crazy.
It's just amazing how, you know, things work out like that, you know, in our lives. You know, in my situation where, you know, we had 2, and I told my wife, we either wanted 2 or 4. We weren't going to have 3. because threes, there's always one left out and it's always the youngest. And so when we decided after we had the two, we're like, okay, fine, we'll just go for three and we'll be done. Well, then the Lord blessed us with two at one time. So it just goes to tell you that, you know, you think you have a plan for one thing and no.
Yeah.
There's something else out there. So,
which is so cool. Such a blessing.
So, okay. I had that wrong. Cause I thought that you had the two first and then you adopted, but
nope. We had the two adopted, then had two and then adopted another four.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So what's the, I get you, holidays were pretty crazy.
Holidays are
Christmas and stuff.
Wild and hilarious. Yeah. For, you know, it's funny, for years we had everybody, you know, we'd bring all the older kids back. And this past year was the first time we didn't do Christmas morning altogether ever. Mm. Yeah. The kids are all getting older and they're living on their own. And some of our kids, you know, don't drive. And so we did with some of them, we did one-on-one stuff. Mm-hmm. And with others, we had them over during the day Christmas. You know, our daughter Portia came down from Salt Lake and spent the afternoon with us. And but usually when we had, and you know, we never had all eight of them at home at the same time. We did get up to, I think, six was the total at home, because Portia had moved out when Chloe moved in, but then Portia moved back in for a while, but by then David had moved out. So it's kind of been shuffling in and out. Mm. But Christmas morning's a blast. And it's funny the memories that you make, you know. We all pile in this room that I'm in now, which is not a big room in our house, but everybody loves being in nice and close. And we have the Christmas tree. And and you know, there's a special bond. There's a, you know, our family's a little bit different, but there's a special bond. I'll tell you one of our favorite memories. You know, my wife is very health conscious and the kids are blessed because of it, because I'm just not, you know. And so my wife is, so basically growing up, like, we would never, ever buy sugar cereal. Like, never. We just did not have sugar cereal, you know, no Fruit Loops, no Cocoa Puffs, that kind of stuff. Never, you know, we didn't have that much like prepared cereal in the home. But this one Christmas, we knew everyone was going to be there. We were going to have, actually, this was before Cameron. We only adopted Cameron about a year and a half ago. So this would have been with the seven kids. Yeah, Cameron is only, he'll be 20 next month. Mm-hmm. So, but this was with all the older kids. And so my wife and I were in the grocery store and I said, look, it's Christmas morning. We should get sugar cereal just to kind of blow their minds. And my wife was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. But if we're going to do it, let's do it. We bought a box of Fruit Loops, a box of Lucky Charms, we bought like 10 boxes of cereal. And we still had a few kids at home at that point too. A couple of the older ones had left. But so anyway, we opened up the presents, and normally we do a pretty big breakfast spread. We kind of just leave out throughout the day and we'll put out quiche and ham and, you know, whatever, fruit, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, that morning we said, there's one last gift. We walked over and we'd put a sheet over all these boxes of cereal and we unveiled it. We pulled that sheet back and it's so funny because even like teenagers, it looked like little kids getting their first bikes. Like, it was just this wide-eyed, like, oh my gosh. And so the kids ate cereal until they were sick. They were just so thrilled that we had sugar cereal in the Ripier home.
Probably removed it and they're like, it's a Christmas miracle.
But we were laughing saying, should we just put out empty boxes?
Yeah.
Just say, yeah, oh, sorry, no. Kids. Yeah, we wanted to get you excited, but nope. No, but we
put it was brand cereal in there and stuff. What, this isn't Fruit Loops?
It's granola. No, that was a fun one though, and the kids still laugh and remember that. So yeah, nice. It's been awesome.
That's funny. So did any of them ever do sports or activities or anything?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. Each of them came with their own things and, you know, none of them, you know, I'm a huge basketball fan. Mm-hmm. I love basketball. None of our kids ever got into basketball. They all, in fact, none of them really got into team sports. One of them, JC liked playing baseball, okay. but he just had a lot going on. And so, you know, we kind of let them figure out their own paths. Chloe liked to dance. Portia took karate for a while. You know, but the our kids did a lot more individual stuff. Like they were all, not all, some of them were into hiking, rock climbing, you know, bike riding, whatever. So we are big fans of not pushing our kids to like what we like, not pushing them toward certain things, but encouraging them to being into something. And in fact, the reason I was just on the phone with Cameron, my 19-year-old, you know, he has a Nintendo Switch. He has a time limit on it and he lives in this group home. Mm-hmm. And today, Sunday, he just had nothing else going on. So he burned out all his minutes on his Nintendo Switch. Mm-hmm. So he's calling me saying, "Can't you just add another hour? I'm bored sick." You mm-hmm. know, and I had to say, "Hey, I think a couple hours is enough. Go find something to do. Mm-hmm. Go make yourself a better person. Go for a walk. Do..." You know, we talked through all the options of what he could do. Mm-hmm. And we just try to encourage our kids to do what makes them happy.
Mm. So every time you brought, you know, another child into the family, was there any, you know, jealousy from the other kids, or did they just
For sure.
welcome them with yeah. open arms? Okay.
Yeah. And it all depended. I mean, you know, it's really, you know, you think about the position of like our son Miles, you know, I always think like, what would it be like for him? Hey, you're a 14-year-old. Guess what? You now have a sister who's your same age and is going to go to the same school, same church group, same friends, same whatever as you, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, hey, you used to be the oldest. Guess what? You're not the oldest anymore. Now we've got this kid. And, you know, yeah, I think it was. And there's a tricky dynamic too, in that David and Krista are birth brother and sister. Mm-hmm. So they have that bond and they were the first. So even though they're not the youngest, they were the, you know, they were, mm-hmm. I mean, even though they're not the oldest, they were the first, but they're not the oldest. Then comes Miles, who is biologically the first, but he's not the first, you know. Keaton, who's the baby, has stayed the baby the entire time, but the baby wasn't last. He was fourth. There were four more to come.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then, you know, when Chloe came, Portia had already moved out. So Chloe and Portia don't know each other that well. They don't have, you know, a crazy tight relationship. And I think it was probably hard for Krista. Krista was the only girl. And then we suddenly adopt Portia. And now not only is Portia another girl, she's the oldest, you know, so our dynamic is really funky. But a lot of it too, our kids came with boatloads of problems. You don't, you know, the consequences of drugs and the consequences of illegal activity mm-hmm. are major on children. And our children tell heartbreaking stories of finding their parents passed out with heroin needles in their arms when they come home from school. You know, of our children whose parents were all about our age or younger than we are, you know, three parents of all of our kids out of all of our kids, three parents have died. You know, it's been really rough. You know, one of our kids, you know, found her mom literally dead in the kitchen and had to call an ambulance, and she was, you know, resuscitated, but that led to a lot of acting out. You know, we've had kids in jail, multiple kids in jail. Mm-hmm. We've had some really violent kids. The police, there was a stretch where the police were here all the time. Like it was just, and you know, to us, it became like, okay, they're starting to rage. They just punched a hole in the wall. Call the police. We're going to stay calm. Police come. Either, you know, the kid runs away and then is gone for a couple nights. Mm-hmm. Or calms down and agrees to calm down. Sometimes the cops had to come twice because the kid agrees to calm down, then doesn't, you know, or, mm-hmm. hey, we're going to take you down to the station, spend the night, or take you for the day. There's a wonderful place in Provo called Vantage Point. And Vantage Point is a place that it's just for kids of a certain age. And I think it's from, I want to say it's from like 8 years old through 18 or something like that. Mm-hmm. We're sort of a cool down place. It's like, look, you're not under arrest. We need to cool off and work things through. They go there, they meet with a therapist, they write down goals, they play games and stuff. And it's a couple of days. And, you know, we've had four of our kids go to Vantage Point, I think. Okay. You know, a couple of them multiple times where it was like, look, we're at wit's end. You're at wit's end. Mm-hmm. You know, no one can deal with this right now. But we've had kids. We had one kid who was in the system in the juvenile detention center for almost a year. And, you know, those things are hard. And it makes for a really different family dynamic because the kids could also, some of the kids, you know, you ask, there was jealousy. Sometimes they were afraid of other kids, like, you know, what's going to happen. And then resentment, like I want to defend my brother. I want to defend my parents.
Yeah.
You know, we had a daughter who almost got arrested at Disney World. It's one of my favorite stories. You know, she came from a really rough background and we had just adopted her and we went to Disney World as a family and I knew how much money she had. And all of a sudden after the first day, she's showing us that she had bought like 10 keychains or something that should have cost double the amount of money she had. Oh. And I said, well, so you're out of money now. And she said, oh no, I still have, you know, $30 left or something. And then we knew she was lying. We finally got her to confess, but it was hours of fighting in a condo at Disney World. She finally confessed she had stolen all the keychains. And so we had to go in and tell security. And actually Disneyland Disney World has a police force that's supplied by Orlando.
Oh,
so
really?
We went in with an actual cop, turned her in, said, hey, I'm willing to pay whatever it takes, but she needs to be held accountable. And fortunately, they were so cool about it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then that daughter didn't speak to me the rest of the trip. So, you know, it's led to some wild times, you know.
Yeah.
We have one son who stole from a whole bunch of our neighbors' kids at school.
Okay, like, I stole remember out you of telling their backpacks. That story.
Yeah, he stole cell phones and stole everything. Unfortunately, we have wonderful neighbors. And actually, the reason this one kid ended up in the juvenile detention center, he stole a credit card from one of our neighbors when he was over at their house. And, you know, our neighbors have been such a blessing. They've all been great about it. Even, you know, that neighbor just was like, hey, all we care about is your son.
Yeah.
How's he doing? How can we help him? So yeah, it stretches those limits, but I'll tell you the proudest thing for me as a dad is right now, all of my kids are functioning and they're functioning, many of them at a higher level than I ever thought they would. And right now I could pick up the phone and at least in this moment, I could call any one of my kids or call my son who's still at home into the room. Every one of them will say hi, be excited to talk to me. We'll talk. And at the end it's, I love you, dad. I love you too. Or I love you, whatever. And it's, you know, so whatever happens, the truest thing I ever heard about being a dad is the days are long and the years are short. And that is the truest thing I've ever heard. There were days where, you know, we were like, you know, we got one kid who won't come home, one kid lying about where they are, a kid punching, you know, like I said, holes in the wall or kicking out banisters on the stairs, you know, cops, whatever. I was out of town traveling a lot.
Yeah.
And it felt like this will never end. Life is miserable. It's always going to be. And now I sit here, I'm almost 50. And I look back, I've got one school year left with one kid and that's it. And I go, where did time go? Like, when did that happen? I can barely remember that. And if you build a solid foundation with your kids, because we also had a lot of fun. We took these kids to Hawaii. We took them on cruises. They've been to Disneyland and Disney World. I don't know how many times.
Yeah. I know you're a big fan of Disneyland and Disney.
I'm a big Disneyland, Disney World fan. And I still take them on one-on-one trips all the time. even, you know, I'll just grab one or two of them and go, hey, we're going to Disneyland this weekend.
Nice.
Because we have that bond, you know, I think sometimes parents, it can be tempting to resent what your children put you through. And so you can withhold, and you can withhold that love and go, well, I'll bond with you and I'll shower you with all that love when you get your crap together. And that's not the kid's job. It's our job to shower them with love, be good role models, be good parents, be their friends. And then, you know what, honestly, like we look back and we laugh, like we'll be together as a family, and it may just sound horrible. There might be people recoiling in horror hearing this, but we'll say, hey, remember that time you took a swing at me and then the cops came, and remember what you said? And the kids will be laughing hysterically, including the kid who did it. You know, he or she will be the one bringing it up going, oh yeah, well, at least I never stole mom and dad's car and got it stuck in the mud. You know, oh yeah, well, at least I never, you know, and we laugh because it's funny. You look back and you go, how did we survive all that?
Yeah.
But being a dad is just the greatest blessing there is. Yeah. It's amazing.
Well, I know that like with my family, there's eight of us. I'm the youngest of eight. And when we get together, there's stories that go around that my parents don't even know about. Because one of the houses that we grew up with was a two-story. There was a basement. And the things that we did down there in the basement, you know, I mean, it was nothing illegal or anything. It's just, you know, just mischief that you got into and stuff. Or, you know, there would be fights and everything, but the parents would never know about it.
We had one night, we were all having dinner and found out that my daughter and son, who both have graduated and moved on from our home, that they used to, every Sunday we would do, it was called reading resting hour. And it was for us, I admit it, but we'd get home from church. We'd eat whatever. We'd say, okay, guys, reading resting time. You're allowed to read a book or play with something in your room or take a nap, but everyone has to go to their rooms. We will call you when we're done. We come to find out that one of my sons and one of my daughters would climb out their windows and go sit on the roof of our house during resting time.
And just hang out?
They just hang out. It was hilarious. But Adam, it's a blessing. And I'm so glad you're doing this podcast to point out, you know, the important role of fathers. I don't think it can be stated how important fatherhood is in the life. And, you know, my own father.
Yep.
So critical in my development and just grateful to be a father.
Yeah, definitely. No, that was one of the main reasons why, you know, I decided to do this podcast and bring Steve along with me. It's just, you know, how important it is to be a father and just to give our perspective of, you know, what fatherhood is and why as dads we do things, you know, that maybe, you know, the wife is questioning, why are you doing it like that? Well, here's why we do, you know, we do it like that. So,
for sure.
But then of course, you know, we're always the Steve, he love the guy. He can get rowdy sometimes. So he's the loud one. And
yeah.
And then I'm more of the kind of quick witted, you know, just, you know, go off on tangents about something. So
nice.
But no, we both feel really strong about, you know, being a father. And, that's one, you know, for me, it's the most important thing, in my life is to be a good father, to be that, example to those who are to the kids. And, you know, one of the first episode that we ever did was, they're always watching because they are. I mean, if you don't think that they're watching, if you don't think that they're listening, they are. I mean, especially when they get up to the age of, you know, 9, 10, and 11, my wife and I will be having conversations. And then next thing you know, my oldest is piping in. Oh, wait, what? Well, you have your headphones on. She had paused her, whatever she was doing, and she's sitting there listening to us. We have no clue, but she's sitting there listening, and then she'll just pipe up and say something and take us by surprise. So
100% totally true.
Yeah. So
awesome.
Just being there for your kids. And that's what I love about your story is, you know, like you were talking about all the hard times and everything, and, but you've always been there for them. And, and even though they're not your, you know, they're not your blood, but you still love them all the same.
So, all the same.
And that's awesome. And I commend you for that.
I love
it. I'm kind of like you. I'm not that person. You know, there's people out there like Sean Rapier. They can, you know, they can go and adopt them, you know?
So. Yeah. But you know, and there are people who really aren't those people, and that's okay. You know, yeah. my brother and sister-in-law did foster care where mm-hmm. they knew they weren't keeping the child. And I go, that's not me. I can't do that. You know, mm-hmm. and that's probably true. And that's the wonderful thing is, you know, I don't know that I could do twins. I mean, holy cow, seriously, like, Adam, how do you do twins? My gosh. And there are people who will say, I couldn't handle twins. Well, they're probably right. And if you believe in a higher power that's mm-hmm. kind of overseeing all this stuff,
yeah,
then it's okay that you can't do whatever it is that you can't do, because you're going to do the thing you can do mm-hmm. and just be the best father that you can within.
Yeah. Before we had the twins, we always thought that we could never do it.
Yeah.
But now that we have them, we wouldn't have it any other way.
So. Well, here's some fatherly wisdom is when people talk about what a lot of kids is, a lot of kids is one more than you have. That, I believe that. I really mm-hmm. believe that you figure out, you know, however many kids you have, you know, you guys have four right now.
Yeah.
So five becomes a lot.
It becomes a lot. Yeah.
But if you were to get a fifth, you'd go, you know what? That's not that bad. Mm-hmm. Six though is unimaginable. So, yeah. You know, the and that's just the truth is yeah. that, you know, it's the definition of a lot of kids is one more than you have.
Yeah. All right, Sean. Well, thanks for, coming on and talking to me. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while now. So,
well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. This was great.
And I know that you said you're going to have me on yours. So we'll get that set up, but
we'll do it.
But yeah, well, thank you for joining. And it should be out in a couple weeks, maybe out this week. So I'll cool let you know when I publish it. So
perfect. All right, Adam, Sean, thanks, man. It was so good actually talking to you. So
yeah,
this was great. And then I'll reach out to you. Mm-hmm. And we'll figure out a date to get your episode recorded. All right.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right, brother. Thanks.
Well, take care. We'll talk to you later.